Morning, Council. Ready to proceed?
Yes, thank you.
Please do so.
Good morning. This appeal involves a declaratory ruling by the Labor Board that involuntary compelled discovery of information by the public employer from a union representative might unduly interfere with the employee's right to engage in mutual aid and protection. The board, in issuing a declaratory ruling, was doing so under its discretion provided to it by the legislature. The circuit court did not find that the declaratory order was palpably erroneous or unwarranted under the discretion of the board, and therefore the circuit court erred in reversing the board's declaratory ruling. The board has the exclusive jurisdiction to enter a declaratory ruling in this matter. The legislature provided the board and said that where the board has the authority to find prohibited practice conduct, it may also then review it under a declaratory ruling standard or method of reviewing the conduct. The facts, just generally, as I'm sure the court is aware of the facts, did involve over a period of about 2 years where the United Public Workers found itself being served with subpoena ducis tecums by the public employer for information that the business agents acquired through discussions with the employees who were subject to discipline. The union was acting in its exclusive representative capacity, and by statute, they were engaging in conduct that was going to lead to mandatory binding arbitration. I cite you to section 89-10.8A that states that a public employer shall enter into a written agreement that will culminate in a final and binding decision, a grievance procedure culminating. And so initially it starts out with the role of the union representative is taking a grievance with the intent that it will go to arbitration as a mandatory condition under 89-10.8.
There's been some dispute between the parties as to actually what the scope of the declaratory order is. What is your view of the limit or scope of the declaratory order?
I would point the court first to the section that's no longer tabbed in my book, but it's the section on declaratory rulings.
You mean the order itself? The last?
Well, it's in this court, the board rules. That a declaratory ruling is based on the petition, the facts in the petition, or as covered by the order. And so to answer your question, I first go to the rule, which says that that's the scope of a declaratory ruling. And then I look at what were the facts that the board reviewed. And it reviewed four types of conduct where the employer was compelling involuntarily through subpoenas that the union produced these documents. And so we would submit that paragraph 9 of the declaratory order on page 1267 of the certified record on appeal, which is page 12 of the decision itself, says when an employer seeks to obtain records of union grievances, investigations of employee discipline, or notes of union stewards and business agents, conversation with employees in the course of union representation, and these are all types of matters the union would have obtained through its status as exclusive bargaining representative in investigating disciplinary actions.
So are you saying that your interpretation is that the board ruled that the requests made in the underlying cases were in fact unfair labor practices?
No, they specifically found that they were, in fact, that they know that that was not the purpose of a declaratory ruling. They were giving guidance that in the future, subpoena ducis tecums used by an employer where it unduly interferes with the rights of the employees to engage in mutual aid and protection might be a prohibited practice. And so the value of that is on many fronts. And first off, this allows the union to now at least bring a prohibited practice complaint in the future if it believes that an employer is unduly interfering through use of trying to compel a business agent, as most of these cases involved, although it might be a shop steward.
Would the board have the authority to find an unfair labor practice where a court or arbitrator approved the subpoena request? In other words, a subpoena was made, other party moves to quash, court looks at the arguments and says, well, this doesn't violate Rule 26, so I'm going to permit the subpoena to go forward. Can the labor board subsequently say, looking at that, that was an unfair labor practice because the scope of the subpoena request asked for union grievance materials?
I submit that they could find an unfair labor practice because the legislature has provided exclusive jurisdiction to the board to decide Chapter 89 issues.
Wouldn't that usurp the authority of the court or an arbitrator in handling that particular litigation if the labor board could subsequently, in effect, overrule their determination that was a permissible discovery request?
I disagree because, and first off, I would point to the American Airlines case that the employer points to, which is in footnote 3, and we point that out in our reply brief, that the court recognized that although it was finding a lawful purpose in and would lawfully compel compliance with the discovery request, that it may in fact be an unfair labor practice charge before the National Labor Relations Board. So I don't agree that some conduct that may be lawful before the court is precluded because of its lawfulness before the court of being prohibited practice conduct before the board, who has, again, the exclusive jurisdiction to decide that. In fact, the court couldn't decide that. The court, as you pointed out, could only decide that under Rule 26, it could compel the production of those documents. And so I don't think that contradicts in any legal parameters that the board, though, can still find that the employer had an unlawful purpose, willfully interfered unduly with the employee's rights. So I would submit that that is a scenario that might play out. I don't find, though, the board finding, maybe the board, let's say the board did find that. Said, okay, you know, that subpoena you got over there in federal court that unduly interfered. And then the union with that order might go back to the federal court and say, look, this is what the board found. And it's up to the court then to decide, well, should I reconsider my order, or should we just, you know, I'm going to hold with what I, you know, what I held under Rule 26.
So whether or not the availability of an unfair practice complaint being filed in this context, whether or not that would affect the employer's ability to litigate a particular case or arbitrate a case, you think that's not relevant to whether the board has jurisdiction to render this kind of declaratory order?
Well, I'm picking on the word of effect, and I think when I look at the law and how it evolves, there's always an effect when one court makes a decision or an order that has an effect in the future on a new case. And similarly, in these discovery matters, it evolves that by the board having found that it could unduly interfere, that may then be an influence on a court or an arbitrator in the future when they're looking at a subpoena challenge. And the board, arbitrator, or the court may say, well, this is a balancing test I'm going to apply here. Do you really need this information, and are you interfering with the employee rights? I also think that the board's declaratory ruling educated the courts and the arbitrators in the future that the union is acting as a representative under the 26, Rule 26, because that's the language also that I think arbitrator Mill had examined in his order.
Ms. Covert, did the circuit court even reach that issue, though, or did the circuit court simply say the board did not have jurisdiction, i.e. exceeded its authority?
The circuit court?
In reviewing the board's decision.
I'm sorry, thank you. Could I ask you to ask
a question? Yeah, no, I mean, there's, Judge Nakamura was asking you about the scope of the board's ruling. I guess I'm asking you about what the circuit court decided in this case, which is really what we're looking at. And I think that there's also a little bit of maybe disagreement on that, which is, did the circuit court simply say the board didn't have jurisdiction to enter its ruling, or did the board go further and comment, or did the circuit court go further and say anything about the substance of the board's ruling on, for example, Rule 26?
I found that the, first off, the circuit court did not make a ruling that the board did not have jurisdiction. And that's why in my opening statement I did say that I don't find that the board, the court, circuit court found that, that it was palpably erroneous or that there was an error in using its discretion. I think it found that the board had the right to enter a declaratory ruling in this type of issue. But I found from the comments in the circuit court, not so much from the order, because it just said it, the board had exceeded its authority, but in its verbal comments, the court was commenting on of what value is this? Isn't it vague because it says it might be a prohibited practice complaint? So I think it was not even commenting, when I looked at the comments of the circuit court, even rejecting that the board was wrong in its analysis under 26, Civil Rules of 26. And it was more concerned with, you know, the value of it and wasn't it too vague, and therefore was it an error to issue a declaratory ruling that was so vague. And I point out that I don't think the other side has ever claimed that that declaratory ruling is too vague to be of any use. And we find it of use if for no other reason. It certainly would now allow the union to bring a prohibitive practice complaint, say that you are unduly interfering with the right of an employee to engage in mutual aid and protection, and sustain, withstand a challenge to a motion to dismiss as failure to state a claim.
What about the question of the merits of the decision itself? In other words, that one of the arguments that I think in other cases they've found where lawful practices can be an unfair labor practice is they look at the purpose of the action, like an abusive litigation situation. Obviously, you can file complaints, but if you do it for the unlawful purpose of coercing someone's exercise of their rights, that might be invalid. In this declaratory order, I didn't see anything where the court had that. In other words, there's no indication that there's a requirement for the declaratory order that to be an unfair labor practice, that the employee would have had to issue the subpoena for the purpose of coercing. Did the circuit court rule on that aspect of whether the declaratory judgment order on the merits was correct? And is that something that we should look at? Or if we send it back, is that something that the circuit court can look at anew?
I don't know that they necessarily addressed that. I think, though, that the board order found that two things. One, it found that it's possible that it might be that you an employer is in, you know, engaging in conduct that, I mean, strike that, that the employer is unduly interfering with the employee rights. That's the first part, which is 89-3. And then it went on to find that it might then also be a prohibited practice under 89-13A1, which covers interference of employee rights. And that requires a willful conduct by the employer.
All right. So beyond the principle that in a subpoena that requests information that's protected by Rule 26, that might be an unfair labor practice, what does this declaratory order actually accomplish?
First off, I think it accomplishes that a union knows that it can bring that type of a prohibited practice in the future and withstand a motion to dismiss for unfailure to state a claim, because the statute does, as interpreted now by the board, find that such conduct might unduly interfere. I think it puts notice to the employer that it certainly needs to examine the scope of subpoenas and the purpose of the subpoena and engage in the conduct consistent with that understanding. And it also puts on notice the employer so that if it proceeds further, it may so do so with a willful nature if it knows the consequences of its conduct.
But there was some indication that the board's ruling would somehow affect how a arbitrator or a court would view the subpoena and whether it complied with Rule 26. From what I'm hearing from your argument, that's really not what the purpose of the declaratory order would be, because you're seeming to say that the discovery rule is separate from this unfair labor practice issue.
Right. I think the board was looking at the employer's challenge to the board that if you issue this declaratory ruling, you will be setting a new privilege. So the board had to respond to that, that it's not exceeding its jurisdiction by entering this declaratory ruling, and so it engaged in a discussion about why it was not creating anything new, but just being consistent with Rule 26.
Counsel, in civil practice, your general civil practice, you have a subpoena deuces tecum issued, and if there's privileged information or privacy issue on the person receiving that, they file their motion to quash. And if they prevail, there is no privacy violation, there is no violation or infringement of the privilege. That's what the motion of quash is used for. So how does just the issuance of the subpoena itself violate sort of a privileged information? Isn't that the motion to quash the vehicle to make sure that privilege is not violated?
Well, I think first off, the declaratory ruling said that it might unduly, under the circumstances, might unduly interfere. And so the first question I think what you're asking is the issuance of the subpoena alone or the then going into enforce to compel compliance. But I think you do find that when you're dealing with Section 89.3 rights, there is a concern of chilling the employee's rights by unduly interfering. And if you know that the employer will come and just be able to try and subpoena, it will chill the employees. And this was the declaration of Mr. Taniguchi, that he had spoken freely to his business agent because of assurances that it would be confidential and that he could be frank and open with his business representative in talking about the termination that he had been imposed on him. And so when they learned that the employer now is going to subpoena that information, how it plays out in the end, I think the act of subpoenaing alone can send a signal to the employee that would chill their exercise of their rights in the future.
What if the employer wasn't sure whether this was privileged or not? Would that make a difference as opposed to knowing this was privileged information and the law was clear?
From the perspective of the board's declaratory ruling, it would go to, I think, the willfulness of the employer. So in the future, if there's a challenge to that subpoena and the employer comes forward and said, you know, I wasn't really asking for the notes of what they'd interviewed with the individual terminated, I was just asking if the business agent had what rules he was relying on, or so whatever else it might be, and the board would then have to, under its normal practice of deciding prohibitive practices, decide if that was willful.
But your analysis is that they could find an unfair labor practice even if the court determined that the subpoena was a valid subpoena.
I do.
So doesn't that infringe upon someone's right? In other words, part of the declaration itself says you have to construe these acts in the context of Rule 26. But you don't construe that as meaning that if it complies with Rule 26, then it by definition is not an unfair labor practice?
No, I think there was a discussion by the board about how under Rule 26, the information request would be going towards the records of a business agent would be the type of material that would be covered under 26. But I think the board was finding that it didn't have the jurisdiction to decide whether or not that information request was lawful under 26,
But if the declaratory judgment order is construed as raising the possibility that something that would otherwise qualify as relevant discovery could still be an unfair labor practice, doesn't that affect the balance or how that litigation is conducted? In other words, you're affecting the balance between the employer and an employee in a litigation that would not exist. You know, you're telling the employer something that you might be able to do legitimately in a litigation now is sanctionable as an unfair practice because of this declaratory order.
That is what could be something that would occur through this declaratory ruling. But at the same time, I think, again, the courts on a daily basis have to weigh various factors to reach their decision. And if this board could not make a declaratory ruling saying, hey, sometimes it might be prohibited practice, that message will never get to the court and the court would never know that. And so to say that the board that has been empowered by the legislature to interpret and apply Chapter 89 is precluded from finding that sometimes a discovery request will unduly interfere with that right, is to...
Let me ask you another question. Under this declaratory order, if the court, if the employer makes a request for grievance records and the court quashes it, is that automatically an unfair trade practice, unfair labor practice?
No.
Because why?
Because the standard that the court is applying is a different standard than the board would be applying to find if the conduct was a willful violation under Chapter 89, 13A.
Right, so you're just saying that the willfulness is what makes this, is the key issue. In other words, it doesn't automatically rise and fall on whether it's discoverable or not discoverable. In addition to that issue, you have to focus on the employer's purpose for making the request.
Well, whether it's willful.
Improper purpose or a purpose to coerce the employee's exercise of their rights.
Well, I don't think I wouldn't go to say that it's that has to be the conduct that to that extreme. If it's a willful act of the employer to obtain records that it knows the union acquired solely through its capacity as exclusive bargaining representative in a one-on-one conversation with a disciplined employee, where that employee is engaging in mutual agent protection, which is entitled under the statute, the board's going to have to look at whether or not that conduct was a violation because it unduly...
Your view of willfulness doesn't necessarily require that the request have been made for an improper purpose.
Correct.
Of... Does not.
Right.
All it has to do is acknowledge that the information that's requested was information that was conveyed in a way that the employer should know was intended to be confidential or may affect the employee's willingness to seek advice from the union. I mean, that's sort of your assessment of what willful means in this context.
And if the board knew that the actions and its conduct could result in its violation of the statute, that would be a willful. I'm sorry, there's a better definition by this court and the Supreme Court than I'm quoting here. But there's well-settled law on what is the elements for a willful conduct.
Are you also arguing that the board can create a privilege? You know, because generally, you know, a privilege not to, you know, come forth with information in response to a subpoena, attorney, client, spousal, doctor, patient, are creatures of statute.
No, I'm not arguing that, and let me answer that question, then I reserve my rest of my time. But no, we're not arguing that. And we're arguing that, again, the board is only looking under Chapter 89 and whether that line of subpoenas or inquiries interfered unduly with the employee rights. And if a court taking this declaratory ruling or subsequent public prohibitive practice complaint decisions says, wait a minute, you know, maybe this information you're seeking under Rule 26 is, you know, haven't shown the basis to take it to have that information if you're interfering with those employee rights based on these prior decisions of the board, and then would so find.
But you're saying the unfair labor practice is not congruent with Rule 26. So in effect, aren't you de facto establishing a privilege? I mean, to the extent that you're saying that certain things that would otherwise comply with Rule 26 may violate this declaratory order, isn't that establishing something beyond Rule 26?
I think the fact that you have the board has established certain conduct that might be unlawful under Chapter 89, that's what it does. If it creates a privilege, it's for the court to decide that. And just like a court will decide privileges or Rule 26 decisions based on a consideration of all facts, now it has one more fact to consider that it didn't have before this declaratory ruling. If I could reserve the rest of my time, thank you.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Nakamura, Justice Foley, Justice Leonard, I'd like to begin my argument this morning with an example. Let's say we have a female adult corrections officer, an ACO, employed by the Department of Public Safety, who files a lawsuit in state or federal court alleging that she was sexually harassed by her supervisor 1 year ago. This was a single incident that she did not report to the employer until 1 year. During discovery, the female ACO is questioned about why she failed to report the alleged sexual harassment for 1 year and who was the first person she informed of this alleged sexual harassment incident. The female ACO says that she told her UPW union agent about the alleged sexual harassment 1 year ago, immediately after the incident, and the UPW union agent took notes of what she reported to him. The employer then issues a subpoena ducis tecum to the UPW to produce the union agent's notes of the plaintiff's report of the alleged sexual harassment to determine whether the allegations she reported in the complaint are consistent with the allegations she reported to her union agent. The UPW then files a motion to quash the subpoena in state or federal court. The judge has a hearing, denies the motion, and orders the UPW to produce the union agent's notes. According to the board's declaratory order in this case, the employer would have or may have just committed a prohibited practice. That cannot be right.
Why not? In other words, you can make the arguments that you would have made to the board and say, under this fact pattern, it's not an unfair labor practice because it wasn't willful or it was permissible under the rule.
Because the board would be usurping the authority of the judge to regulate discovery in that case. And it is as simple as that. The board is exceeding its authority because it's de facto telling the employer or prospectively prescribing what type of discovery the employer can engage in before the court. And if it's an arbitration, we have rules concerning discovery. Arbitrators are bound by HRS Chapter 658A and those rules regarding discovery. If we're in court, the judges have their rules. The board should not be telling arbitrators or judges how to regulate discovery.
Is that a policy argument? In other words, looking at jurisdiction.
Sure.
The board does have jurisdiction to make declaratory orders concerning what conduct would constitute an unfair labor practice. You're not disputing that part of it?
No, I'm not disputing that.
All right. So in exercising its jurisdiction, it finds a practice that has impacts in other situations. What rule of law or authority are you saying that because the labor board's decision may affect litigation, that it's the usurping part of it? What rule of law says they cannot usurp arbitrations and litigations by exercising their authority in their own jurisdiction?
I would cite to, if in the case of an arbitration, it would be HRS Chapter 658A, and I believe specifically HRS 658A-17, the rules regarding discovery, whereby that would be the exclusive jurisdiction of the arbitrator to decide. If it was in state or federal court, I believe it would be Hawaii Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 26, or Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 26, and the case law that goes with that.
But Mr. Keating,
yes.
Let's just go with the arbitration example under 658A.
Yes.
Yes, the arbitrator has exclusive jurisdiction to decide that, but the arbitrator looks to law and rulings of other bodies, doesn't he or she?
Yes, and the arbitrator could do that.
So couldn't the arbitrator in that instance be looking to the board's declaratory ruling to guide him or her?
Yes, the arbitrator could do that, and I think what we're arguing here is it has to be on a case-by-case basis, that the board's declaratory order is de facto prospectively prescribing certain conduct or certain discovery. And so if the arbitrator, in reviewing the facts, grants a motion to quash based upon that case, I don't have a problem with that. But the board should not be telling arbitrators and courts in advance what type of discovery is permitted and what kind of discovery is not permitted.
Isn't UPW arguing, though, we're not telling the arbitrator or the court what to do, we're just putting everybody on notice if you do something that may be a prohibited practice?
Well, I have a fundamental problem with the board's order and the UPW's argument in that I see a prohibited practice if the employer threatens a union shop steward under threat of discipline to produce notes. Is a very different factual situation than the employer issuing a subpoena and engaging in discovery. So that to me, they're completely different situations. And if I could talk about the Cook Pink case and some of the other concerns.
Are you arguing that a subpoena could never be a prohibited practice?
I would say yes. A subpoena could not be a prohibited practice.
Even if its intent was to chill, have the impact of chilling.
You know, when you start talking about even if if its intent was to chill. You get into a discussion about if you're in litigation and you're subpoenaing records. I mean, there could be some possible fact pattern which the employer does something which is completely unrelated to the litigation.
Give you an example.
Sure.
I'll make it quick.
Okay.
Years ago, when I was practicing law, I was representing the Save Sandy Beach Coalition, and Justice Levinson representing another group, Kaiser Bedford Properties. He issued subpoena duces tecums to people that signed the petition of the Save Sandy Beach initiative on the ballot. We moved to quash on the argument that its purpose was to chill. And sitting at that time in circuit court was Justice Acoba, you know, who granted the motion to quash and essentially found that it was issued for and would have the purpose of chilling First Amendment rights. So if you had something analogous to that in the employment sector, could that be argued to be a prohibited practice?
Okay. I could not think of an example, and I have not come across an example in my experience whereby issuing of a subpoena could be a prohibited practice in litigation, specifically because of the willful requirement under 89-13, and as the Hawaii Supreme Court has defined willful in HGA v. Casapang as a conscious, knowing, and deliberate intent to violate the provisions of HRS Chapter 89. So it would have to be so far removed from the actual litigation to somehow be a prohibited practice. Again, it might be possible to dream one up, but I have never seen one, and I can't think of one.
Isn't that what the discovery orders, the declaratory order says, that things might be an unfair labor practice? It doesn't say exactly what is or it isn't. It says it might be.
Well, I have a number
And you seem to be conceding that at some point, abusive discovery practices, you would concede, may be an unfair labor practice. If the employer engages in abusive discovery practices, that could be found to be an unfair labor practice.
Under some circumstances, I guess that would be possible.
All right. So as a matter of principle, if you look at the declaratory order as a matter of principle, there's nothing that's illegal about the board establishing a principle that certain discovery practices may be or might be an unfair labor practice.
But that's not what they're doing in this case.
So isn't your dispute really with the merits of whether they're right or wrong that particular fact patterns would constitute an unfair labor practice?
I agree with that. Yes. Yeah, so if we look at the declaratory order itself, which is on page 12.
All right. Okay. So it's really your argument is that as a policy matter, you don't think it's right that the board should usurp the authority of a court or arbitrator in handling litigation.
I think it's more than
what
just
I'm asking you is,
sure,
what's the legal principle that you, if we go with you,
right,
what legal principle, what case are you citing to us for,
sure, cook paint,
principle that would establish that we can say that we can overrule the labor board's policy decision as to what is a proper, what's good or bad in terms of that order?
Yes, I'll cite you to, I think, the most important case that was cited by the union, the employer, and the board, and that's the Cook Paint case. And in Cook Paint, the very last paragraph of that case, to quote from the court, finally, in view of the court's admonition against our promulgation of a blanket rule, we wish to emphasize that our ruling in this case does not mean that all discussions between employees and stewards are confidential and protected by the act, nor does our decision hold that stewards are, in all instances, insulated from employer interrogation. We simply find herein that because of Whitwell's representational status, the scope of respondents' questioning, and the impingement on protected union activities, respondents' April 21st, 1978 interview of Jesse Whitwell violated Section 8A1 of the Act. And then they go on to say, in a footnote, that there's appropriate mechanism for the employer to get this information if they wanted it, the discovery process, and the employer cannot short-circuit that process through threats and coercion. So I think Cook Paint is telling you, or telling, should have been telling the board, you cannot make a blanket rule like this that addresses all kinds of situations. And if I can talk about the problems I have with the wording of the declaratory order, it becomes very apparent because Judge McKenna, you know, had numerous problems with it. I have numerous problems with it. If I can go ahead and...
Well,
sure.
Now, you say Judge McKenna had numerous problems with it.
Yes.
The written order in this case is quite brief. It
yes.
does not give us a lot of guidance sure. on what her numerous problems were. It just says the board exceeded its authority. What does that mean?
Oh, okay. I can explain it. I was at the hearing before Judge McKenna, and I have the transcript. And so some of the problems Judge McKenna noted with the declaratory order was that it was very, very vague and very broad. That was one. Number two, that she said the board exceeded its own powers under Hawaii Administrative Rule Section 12-42-9I on declaratory rulings, whereby an order disposing of a petition shall be applicable only to the factual situation alleged in the petition or set forth in the order. Number three, she noted that in the declaratory order, the board does not even say the word subpoena in the declaratory order in the final paragraph. It doesn't even refer to subpoenas at all. Number four, the board in the declaratory order uses the term efforts to obtain records without stating what efforts the board is talking about. And again, it goes back to the problem whereby if the employer threatens a union steward under threat of discipline to produce information, it's a completely different factual situation than if the employer issues a subpoena during the discovery process. And Judge McKenna, in ending her discussion about her problems with the declaratory order, she said she could not understand the order herself, so how could a public employer expect to understand it? And I concur with that, because it's just...
Is there case law that says that would make a declaratory order impermissible, improper? Did you cite any?
Well, I mean, it's under 1242-9. This is so broad, it doesn't apply to only the factual situations alleged in the petition. And
if it's construed to mean that under the fact patterns that are provided, that's an unfair labor practice, would that cure the declaratory judgment order?
No, because they don't even say that in the order. They say, in the proper case, may constitute a prohibited practice violative of HRS 8913A1. That's another problem. What does that mean, in the proper case?
You're saying that's one of the things that Judge McKenna found wrong, that there was no link between the factual findings or the underlying facts and the ultimate declaratory order.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And specifically that the declaratory order does not reference the word subpoenas in its ruling and does not define the word efforts. It's not helpful at all. What may constitute a prohibited practice? So what happened in the underlying factual situation here is the board saying it did constitute a prohibited practice. It did not. Nobody knows. And just one other argument I'd like to briefly discuss is that the concept of fairness in litigation, which you touched on, if in fact this declaratory order was allowed to stand, what is happening here is it's allowing the union to engage in certain forms of discovery and the employer cannot engage in certain forms of discovery. It's prospectively prescribing what forms of discovery can be allowed, which would provide a tactical advantage to the other side in litigation, which is unfair. And this is not a case where the employer is going to be deciding on its own what is appropriate in terms of the discovery. It's not a case like that at all. We're going to have an arbitrator, we're going to have a judge who's going to make a decision after hearing all the evidence on whether it should be a motion to quash granted or not.
So is your argument that the labor board should not enter an order in this situation, or that it is prohibited from as a matter of law? But it lacks jurisdiction to issue a declaratory order.
Okay. If it's referring to subpoenas that are issued in arbitrations and in court proceedings, they should not issue a declaratory order. If they want to issue a declaratory order as to proceeding...
Should or cannot, in other words, they lack authority to do it.
I would argue they lack authority.
On what basis?
I'm going back to, again, 658A and the Hawaii Rules of Civil Procedure 26 and Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 26, because
why would that trump Chapter 89?
It's not a question of trumping it. It's a question of this is, if the labor board is saying that if you subpoena these materials, it's a prohibited practice, then we cannot engage in that discovery in federal court or state court when the judge may say that's fine, so you have a conflict. Right? I don't think it's a question of trumping it. It's a question of they don't have authority to tell an arbitrator or judge what forms of discovery are allowed.
But in your brief, Mr. Keating,
yes.
You do seem to argue that the board had, that the circuit court ruled that the board had no jurisdiction to determine the prohibited practice issue. And now you seem to be putting it a little bit differently. Are you saying the board had jurisdiction and otherwise erred in entering the declaratory ruling, or the board didn't have jurisdiction to enter the declaratory ruling?
It's a little bit difficult because if you look on page 10 of the board's declaratory order, they cite to the case of city and county where the UPW filed a prohibited practice complaint against the city for filing a motion, for filing a subpoena ducis tecum in court, and the board acknowledged that they did not have jurisdiction in that case to rule on the propriety of that subpoena, but then they went ahead and issued this declaratory order, so it's inconsistent, so you can read it. So my feeling on this is that the board does not have jurisdiction to issue a declaratory order on subpoenas in arbitrations and courts.
Okay, so, mm-hmm. And let me say this back, because
sure.
Ultimately you want us to write something about this, and we have to be really clear if we
okay.
do. So you're saying that the board may have had jurisdiction over some of the issues it addressed in its declaratory ruling, but not others.
Yes, and
either they had jurisdiction or they didn't.
Okay, I mean, no, I. The best example I can give is that if the board wanted to say, if the employer, under threat of discipline, you know, compels the union shop steward to produce information, I agree that that may constitute a prohibited practice. However, if the same situation, employer issues a subpoena in an arbitration hearing or in a court proceeding, that under no circumstances could be a prohibited practice.
Right, but isn't there a difference between whether the board is right or wrong and whether or not they have the authority to issue the ruling? In other words, maybe we agree, or a court could agree that the board went too far in this particular case,
mm-hmm.
but didn't they still have a right to do it? Didn't they have the authority to say something is or isn't a prohibited practice?
It depends on what they say is or isn't. Some things they...
Right, I mean, but it when you say it depends on what they say, doesn't that go to whether they were right or wrong as opposed to whether they had a jurisdiction to make that decision?
I guess what I'm kind of troubled with or struggling with is whether the question is jurisdiction or exceeded its authority. And so those are two separate kind of questions. So Judge McKenna's ruling was that the board exceeded its authority, and that's, you know, I concur with that. So I'm not sure if that helped. I apologize if it didn't help.
Well, I'm just looking at your headings in the table of contents, which says the circuit court correctly ruled the board exceeded its authority as the board has no jurisdiction to regulate. So it seemed in your brief there was more of a link there than you're saying right now. You said exceeding authority is not the same as jurisdiction.
Well, your question was a little bit different. Would it have jurisdiction to issue a declaratory order on anything related to this subject, or, you see, that's...
To issue this declaratory order.
Oh, yes, no. No. Because, well, this declaratory order doesn't define what they're talking about. That's the problem. The declaratory order just says public employer efforts. So I can't tell you what that means when they say public employer efforts. It's not clear to anybody. Is efforts a threat? Is it a subpoena? Is it something else? And then, you know, in the proper case, I can't understand it. And Judge McKenna couldn't understand it. So.
Thank you.
I just will, if there are no more questions, I'll just finish up and say that it is the job of the arbitrator or the judge on a case-by-case basis to address discovery disputes, and the board should not prospectively prescribe what forms of discovery the employer is allowed to conduct. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let me start out by the point I'd like to make is that read 89-3. What is conduct that unduly interferes with an employee's rights to engage in concerted and mutual aid and protection? That's not a clear, bright line. And that's why the board every year is struggling with charges that an employer has interfered with it. It's a very fact specific. And so to now challenge the board's authority to issue a declaratory ruling on a matter that by its very nature does not have a clear, bright line. But at the same time, some guidance is needed.
But is there guidance provided by this declaratory order? In other words, do you interpret the order as saying that the underlying cases that are cited in the findings of fact, that the subpoena requests in those cases are unfair labor practices? I asked that earlier and you said no.
No, and I said they did not make that finding.
All right, so yes. So is there a specific enough grounding in the rather policy-driven language of the ultimate order that allows someone to construe it in a way that has some concrete basis for it? In other words, when you read the order, it's just basically saying, well, something like this could be a prohibited practice. Does that give anybody any guidance? And is that sufficient to qualify as a legitimate declaratory order?
I think the point I was making earlier on my first portion of the argument is that it does give guidance because if no other reason, it now will sustain a motion to dismiss because at least the union knows there may be a 89-13A1 violation if they can show the facts that it unduly interfered, even though it was a subpoena that was issued in before an arbitrator or a court or even a subpoena that was just submitted. They did not know that before. And so they came to the board before on some motions and all, but no one had ever brought a prohibitive practice complaint, and now they know it. But to then say to the board, there's something wrong with the declaratory ruling because where's the bright line? They can't give a bright line. If they did, it would be a blanket rule. It would say every time you go to get a subpoena and ask for the union's records, that will be a prohibited practice. That would be the blanket rule that the employer is claiming would be unlawful, and that's the problem they have with this order. This order was crafted not to create a blanket rule, and by the nature that it can't create a blanket, every so often there's per se violations that the board has gone on to find, well, that's a per se violation. But it's very limited, and in the 89-3 type of violation, you're usually not going to find it because you have to go and look at the willful, you have to look at the interference, you have to understand if it unduly interfered, was it mutual aid and protection? There's just too many factors to allow the board to craft a declaratory ruling in the manner that the employer would like to see. At the same time, the board is charged by the legislature to interpret and apply Chapter 89, and it can give guidance, and it did give guidance through this. And I think that there is notice now that it might be a violation under Chapter 89. Is it a violation? Do what you do in every case. You're going to have to make an assessment, have your lawyers assess it, look at the pros and cons of it, and then file your prohibited practice and let the board take evidence and make a decision. But at least you know that there is conduct that could, in fact, be found to be a prohibited practice. And I think I'm repeating myself, but I think by the nature of 89-3, it's not something that can be a bright line. I do say...
Isn't the thing that's actually missing from the order itself is some guidance on what constitutes willfulness in this context? In other words, I mean, all you're presenting is situations where people subpoena records, which may or may not be valid under the rule, but what isn't the proof of the pudding really whether it constitutes willfulness? Because that's what makes it a violation of Chapter 89. And is there any guidance in the declaratory order as to that sort of crucial element of this whole scenario?
Well, first let me say that I think the willful element is present in 89-13A1, because that's if you want to have the complaint and an order issue that they violated, committed a prohibited practice complaint, that's where you need the willful. 89-3 is whether or not it interfered with their rights to engage. And so I think the board was making two findings. And so I don't think but the willful, yes, you're correct. That is needed to go then and prove your 89-13A1.
But the order itself does not provide any guidance on under what situations it would be willful and what or does it? I mean, what's your view as to whether it does or does not give guidance on that issue?
I don't think that it was required to give guidance. I don't know that it's necessarily in here. I think someone could argue maybe if you look at the four examples. And the rule, again, is the one I'm sure the court is familiar with, 1249.9i. And so it's the order is going to be held to either the factual situations alleged, which was all that the judge referenced, by the way, and the judge in the circuit court did not reference the second half, which was or set forth in the order, because the order then specifically outlined them. But I think I'm wandering from your question, so.
Isn't your argument very simple? The board has exclusive jurisdiction to determine what is a prohibited practice, and by issuing a declaratory ruling or judgment of this sort is giving guidance to those that appear before it that this may be a prohibited practice, and it's not for the circuit court to second guess the board on this? Is that what you're?
That is my argument, thank you. And I think as far as where's the bright line on willful, just as there's no bright line on what's an interference in the engagement of the employee under 89.3, willful is a fact specific, and it's not a bright line either, I don't think. And so I think, again, the board would have been violating what it can do in a declaratory ruling if it made a blanket order, and I had to leave it open to depending on the facts of each situation. I think that's it.
All right. We'll take this case under advisement. Thank you very much.
All right.